As usual, we're all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's Dhamma. Before we commence today's sermon, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves how extremely fortunate we are to be his students, to be his disciples, to have come across the teaching that enables all sentient beings to free themselves from suffering once and for all, and to achieve the ultimate bliss that life has to offer. To reflect on this, to reflect on how fortunate we are that he is our teacher, let us take a moment to recite the stanzas that were once uttered by one of his disciples, just like us, a very long time ago, when he was questioned, "Who is your teacher? Who is your master? Who do you follow? Whose refuge have you sought?" Let us all be upstanding to recite these stanzas before we observe the precepts, invite the celestial and divine beings, make our resolutions, seek forgiveness, and continue with today's sermon.
Dhirasya vigata mohasya pabhinna khilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susamachittasya buddha silasya sadhupanyasya vesantarasya vimalasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi akatanka tissa tusitasya vantalokamisasya muditasya khata samanasya manujasya antima sarirasya narasya anupamasya virajasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi asansayasya kulasya venaikasya sarati varasya anuttarasya ruchira dhammasya nikhankasya abhasakarasya manachidasya virasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi nisabhasya apameyasya gambhirasya munapatasya khemankarasya vedasya dhammattasya sanguttattasya sangatigasya muttasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi nagasya pantasenasya khina sanyojanasya muttasya patimantakasya dhonasya pannadhajasya vitaragasya dantasya nippapanchasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi isi sattamasya akuhasya tevichasya brahmapattasya nahatakasya padakasya passadhasya vidita vedasa purindadasa sakkasa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi ariyasa bhavitattasa pattipattasa veyyakaranasa satimato vipassissa anabhinatassa noapanatassa anijassa vasipattassa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi ariyassa bhavitattassa pattipattassa veyyakaranassa satimato vipassissa anabhinatassa noapanatassa anejassa vasipattassa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa
And now to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and observe the precepts. Please repeat all together and after me.
Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Saranagamanam sampunnam. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinnadana viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Surameraya majjapama dattana viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Tisaranena saddhin pancha silang dhammam sadhukam surakkitam katnva. Appamadena sampadeta.
Okay, you may all now be seated. Before we continue with today's proceedings, let us all take a moment to invite the many countless beings in the 10,000 world systems within earshot of this sermon. Wherever they may be, whoever they may they join us and witness this meritorious deed. Let us take a moment to gather up an abundance of loving kindness and compassion towards all sentient beings, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who will have been mothers and fathers to us many countless times, brothers and sisters, children, spouses, teachers, friends, and many others, many countless times in this long journey in samsara. And on each occasion, they would have come to our help and rescue, to support and guide us, to assist us, to help us navigate the web of life. Today, we are presented with an opportunity to repay the debts that we owe them. We must remain grateful for what it is they have done for us. So, as I now make this invitation, I urge you to extend that invitation in your hearts and in your minds out to all sentient beings, reminding yourself that you are duty-bound to do so, and with gratitude, and with compassion. May they join us, may they witness this meritorious deed. If there are those among them who are lacking in merits, and as a result of which they have today been born in woeful plains, may they rejoice in these merits, and may such merits help them to free themselves from such woeful states and be born in the blissful plane. And may all beings in the blissful plane be able to listen to the teaching of the great master, the Buddha, understand it, comprehend it, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana.
Samanta chakvalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajas sunantu sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta.
And let us now take a moment to remind ourselves, before we begin today's sermon, that although today we may consider ourselves to be good and kind-hearted people, interested in the Dhamma and our salvation as much as that of others, we are the way we are today thanks to our noble association, as we have come across kind, generous and great people who have helped shape our lives to be as good as they are today. But the truth of the matter is, we have not always had that privilege, that opportunity. Virtually always our associations have been with ignoble, immoral people, whose association defiled our minds with raga, dvesha, moha, desire, aversion and delusion. And having been blinded in ignorance and attachment, many a time we would have offended, insulted, desecrated, and reviled such greatness. The greatness that we fail to see within those great people, the noble triple gem, the noble ones, and so on. Due to our misdeeds back then, today we suffer the consequences. That greatness which we once reviled and desecrated, today we seek, and therefore we struggle, to instill such values within ourselves. Understanding the errors in our ways, let us take a moment to seek forgiveness, as we make a resolve to never conduct ourselves in that manner ever again. So, for any thoughts, words or actions of reviled desecration, insult, slander or offense we might have directed towards the noble ones, the Sammasambuddhas and the Paccekabuddhas, the Arahata Buddhas, Anagami, Sakadagami, Sotapannas, be there on the pathway and having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddha Shasane, may we be forgiven once and for all. And as you seek that forgiveness, I urge you once again to resolve to yourself to never conduct yourself in that manner ever again. Let us now take a moment to do that. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve. May, by the blessings of all the merits that we have acquired throughout samsara, throughout this lifetime, throughout the past year, the past week, the past day, today, and the merits that we are about to acquire as we listen to this sermon and reflect on the Dhamma, may by the power of all that merits, all those merits, we be able to understand the Four Noble Truths, understand the truths uttered by the Buddha, realize it, and free ourselves from the four great hells once and for all by becoming a stream enterer, a Sotapanna. And for those among you who may already have achieved that noble state, may through the course of this sermon, you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages and may we all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. With that resolve in mind, I invite you now to prepare yourselves to listen to the sermon. Let's try and find some answers to some questions that you have sent through. Now, before we talk about some of these questions and the answers to them, I'd like to urge you all to not miss the opportunity. Now, what do I mean by that? Let me explain. Sometimes listening to these questions, it may feel that these questions are unrelated to you, to your circumstances. Perhaps the issues that people talk about and raise and have asked for answers to are not ones that you remember finding yourself in at any point in your life. They're not problems that you face today, and perhaps against your better judgment you might feel that it's not something you will ever come across. And it might be that that is the case. It might well turn out to be the case. However, a good student will be able to nevertheless listen to the response to such a question and glean valuable gems from the Dhamma that we share as a response to those questions. So to be able to do that, you have to be attentive. And something I have always advised and recommended that you do is whenever you sit down or prepare yourselves to listen to a sermon, is to remind yourself what questions you might have. It may be that, of course, and I don't expect that you send through every single question that you have, because after all, I'm not here to answer all of your questions. You must not really expect that of a teacher. A teacher is not someone who answers all your questions. That is Google. A teacher is someone who teaches you how to answer your own questions, so that you don't have to keep coming back to your teacher. That is what any responsible teacher, any teacher who really cares about their students, would do. Because any teacher realizes that they're not going to be around forever. Whenever monks would approach the Buddha and ask him questions, he would give them a method to disentangle themselves from any question, any complication that they might find themselves, not just today but also into the future. And that is what we must learn from our teachers. That is an exemplary teacher. So whenever you ask questions, or if you have your questions and you don't necessarily put them through to us, but you sit down with your question in mind and hope to find some answers from today's sermon, my advice to you is, what you ought to be fishing for is not an answer to your specific question, but rather, you ought to be looking for an answer that helps you to answer any question today and in the future. So it's not really an answer. I'd rather call it a solution. There's a difference between an answer and a solution. An answer is to a question. A solution is to a problem. The problem that we have is we have lots of questions. An answer might address a question. But once you have a solution to the problem, there in itself, almost all questions have been answered. I'll give you a simple analogy. You have a problem. I need to get to work on time. And with that problem, you need to find a solution. But to find a solution, unless you find a solution to that problem, you have lots of questions. What would happen if I'm late to work? What would happen if my boss finds out? Will I get a warning letter? What would happen if I am late to work 3 days at a stretch? What would happen then? Would I receive a pay cut? How would I then be able to pay my bills? How would I be able to look after my family? These are all questions to which you can find answers, but there will be no end to this. But if you find a solution to the problem, then all these questions fade away. They become insignificant. And actually, they're gone for good. So, anytime we come across questions and we look for answers, it's important to ask yourself, am I looking for an answer to a question or a solution to a problem? The Buddha gave us the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths is a solution. Why? Because it teaches us how to solve any problem. Understand the problem, work out the cause of the problem, address the cause, and then the problem shall be solved. Now, once you understand that, there's a path that you need to follow. Steps that you need to take to address the causes, and that is the path. Once you walk the path, you'll realize that the problem has been solved. Now that is a solution. You can apply that to any problem that you have in life, and all questions will disappear. There's not a single problem to which you can't apply that. That is a solution. So that is what we need to be on the lookout for. That is what you need to be paying attention to. Figure out and try and work out, see if you can spot solutions to problems. So when we discuss some of these questions, you may feel that the answers to these questions don't relate to me, they have no relevance to me, why am I wasting my time listening to this sermon, or why are people asking questions, silly questions, you might feel. Okay, perhaps the question is a silly one. But if you have always remained a careful listener, an attentive listener, a diligent student, you will have always realized that in these sermons, I don't give you answers, I give you solutions. So that not only can you apply those solutions to this particular question, but also to any question that you have in general. So try and see if you can work out a solution. You can spot the solution to this problem as well. I think this comes from a lady. I gather that from reading the question. It says, I'm suffering from anxiety and depression at the moment. I was told by an astrologer that my husband, who had to undergo surgery at the time, will not live beyond 2025. This has been working in my mind as an undercurrent, and it's as if I am waiting for something bad to happen. However much I tell myself not to believe in such things, it has not helped me get rid of this thought. Please advise me how to vidarshana this thought and rid of all this unnecessary suffering I'm going through. Your early reply will be greatly appreciated. May the Triple Gem bless you. Okay, so again, question, right? So some of you will think to yourself, well, it's about a husband. My husband has not had a surgery. I've not been informed that he's going to be dead in a few years' time, so it doesn't relate to me. Switch off the sermon. Pointless. Today is going to be a waste of time. I think you can be wiser than that. In fact, I'd like to invite you to start thinking about what sort of answer might you offer to someone who has this problem. Start thinking to yourselves, because at the end of the day, I want you to be able to find answers to life's questions, life's problems. Yes, it may be that today you don't face this problem, but one day you might. And perhaps it's not your husband because you're not married and you have no intention to, but this might one day be your father, or it might be your mother, perhaps it's your sibling, maybe your son or a daughter. So now you see, this can be a generic, a very general situation in life. What sort of answer would you come up with? What sort of solution would you propose to someone who has this sort of problem? I'll give you a few moments to start pulling your thoughts together. Imagine someone came up to you and ask this question of you, what would you offer as a solution? Everything happens for the best? Really? You think that's going to help? Well, I've been informed that my husband will die in 2025, and it's really troubling me because I love him a lot. Well, everything happens for the best. That is so cliche, and I don't think it's going to score you many brownie points. What might you offer? All good things must come to an end. Is that what you're going to offer? Even if he dies, he's going to be born in a better place, we're sure. Is that what you're going to say? These are some of the things that might come up as possible answers. Things that I've heard people say. Oh, you know, it's just astrology, you know, you shouldn't believe in that stuff, you know, who knows, that could be all just a fake, just a fad. Don't believe in all that nonsense. So you might even relate a personal story. You might say, you know, something similar happened to me some time ago. An astrologer, he read my palm and he said, someone's going to die in 3 years' time. It's been 5 years, nothing's happened. It's all just a lie. Don't believe in all that nonsense. Or you could say something like, just make yourself busy. Then you won't have time to think about things like that. Or get yourself a cat. Or a puppy. Then you won't have to worry about your husband passing away. Or you might even suggest, well, if it's 2025, this is 2021, you've got 4 years, right? That's enough time to find yourself a replacement. I mean, 4 years, you could find someone, right, become friends, and then that will probably take a year. And then you've got take a couple of more years to get into an affair with them, right? And then 2025, get ready to get married to them. And then you just have to wait until your husband passes away, and then, you know, you can get to another marriage. And life just goes on. So what is your solution to this problem? Any of the above? Shall we take her out to the movies so she can forget the problem? As it says, it's been working in my mind as an undercurrent, and it's as if I'm waiting for something bad to happen. Or perhaps you could tell her, you know, worse things happen to people. Right? It's not just the husband. Right? Some people, they lose their whole family. Right? Some people lose their husband and their children and their parents and their brothers and their sisters. Right? What are you talking about? Losing one person, that's not such a big deal. Look at what you've got. Come on, cheer up. Would that be maybe a solution you might offer? So I'm giving you time to think. Or you might say, well, you know, what are the chances? You know, it may happen, may not happen. Why worry yourself about something that only might happen? And besides, you know, you got, what, 4 years, four long years. That's a long time. Or you might say, well, you know, you could maybe put him inside some kind of chamber and keep him protected from everything. Like, maybe the astrologer said that he was going to be struck by lightning. Right? In which case, you can put him in a Faraday cage. Right? And protect him like that. So then he's never going to be struck by lightning. Or maybe they said he's going to get into a car accident. So just don't take him in a car. Take him on a bike. Or maybe they said he's going to have a heart attack. Well, whatever it is that you feed him, you know, change his diet. Then that'll work. It's all your cooking, your home cooking, that's eating his heart. Send him to a gym so he can start working out. What might be some of the solutions you would offer? So the lady appears to try not to believe in such things. However much I tell myself not to believe in such things, it's not helped me get rid of this thought. So I imagine this is probably something that someone has suggested and offered. The only problem I have is, why did you speak to the astrologer if you don't believe in what he says? Well, I was told by an astrologer that my husband will not live beyond 2025. And now you try and tell yourself not to believe in such things. I'm not trying to be mean to you, madam. But I'm just saying, you know, what if the astrologer said that in 2025 you're going to win the lottery? Are you going to try and not believe in that? From 2025 onwards, you know, life is going to be wonderful for you and your family. No, I'm not going to, I try not to believe in such things to get my mind off it. Would you? I'm not trying to add salt to the wound. I'm only trying to invite you and encourage you to think rationally. What might be your advice to this lady? In other words, in the event that this happens to be you one day, what, madam? What, sir, might be your advice to yourself? When you one day look at yourself in the mirror and you have this problem, what might you tell yourself? I mean, it's always easy to give others advice, isn't it? Offering advice is very easy because it's, you know, you don't have to do any of that. When someone comes asking, looking for advice, you know, everyone's a philosopher, isn't it? Everyone's a life consultant. Everyone's a psychologist. But when you try and apply the same principles, the things that you preach, now it's a different story. One of the techniques that I employ when I have student monks, ask me, and they come to me with their problems, is I ask them, So we switch roles. I pretend to be them and I ask them to pretend to be me. And I say, okay, right, let's role play. Whatever they said, I say, now pretend that that was me. Now you are my teacher. I have this problem. You have a responsibility to give me an answer, a solution. Talk. You'll be surprised how easily the answers start flowing. If I had a dollar for every time I did that, and they walked away telling me, thank you very much, Swami Nwasi, you've answered all my questions, when actually I said nothing other than, just let's just switch roles. If I had a dollar for every time I said that, I'd be a very rich man by now. Alas, they don't carry wallets with them, so I can't charge them for that advice. Have you, you know, you must all try that approach. It's a very practical and it's a very effective problem-solving technique. Imagine the subject that is the victim is not you. Pretend it's someone else and you are the counselor. And it's your duty to offer them counsel. Give them advice. Make suggestions. Sometimes it's difficult to do it by yourself. Then that's where it helps to have someone else. Share your problem with someone, a trusted friend, a partner, someone, and say, right, can we now switch roles? Usually when you're the one with the problem, you know, these techniques don't always come to mind. Because you feel like that's not fair. You feel like you're trying to fake the whole thing, and you're not satisfied with taking that sort of approach. Because then it's sort of like a personal attack on yourself. Like the answer is obvious. And then you feel like an idiot. So that's why it's best for you to be armed with these techniques and for you to really share these techniques with the people you associate most with, so that when you have a problem one day, they can use these techniques to help you. It's like, it's always good to have a few people around you trained in first aid. Why? So that they can treat themselves? No one gives themselves first aid. I mean, I don't mean just sticking a plaster on a cut on a finger. I mean, you know, proper first aid, like CPR. No one gives themselves that, right? So it's in your best interest to have a few people around you trained in first aid, so that in the event you need it, they're available and first aid is available to you. Now likewise, it's always a good idea to share some of these techniques and methods with the people around you. Give it to them as a gift, and one day they will return the favor. A very practical and a very effective way of solving problems. Take yourself out of the problem. And the answer will be obvious. Isn't that right, Dasandra? Dasandra is here in the audience. He knows what I'm talking about. I'm just saying, he just knows what I'm talking about, that's all. Take yourself out of the problem, and the solution is obvious. If you really can't find someone to help you, to talk with you, go and sit in front of a mirror. There's your counselor. Now, actually, speak out loud. Say your problem. Let the other person listen. And then now, listen to what they have to say. This might sound like a gimmick, but it really works. Try it. So, what advice are we going to share with this lady? Now, it's going to be tough, because you see, the approach that she's trying to take here, however much I try to tell myself not to believe in such things, I'm not sure that's going to work. I know this for one of two reasons. Oh, there are two reasons as to why I believe this is not going to work. One, you've already tried that. If that worked, you wouldn't be sending this question through to us. So I know that doesn't work. And two, you spoke to the astrologer because you believe in that stuff. If you only met them by accident and they just said something in passing, you know, that wouldn't have stuck in your mind if you really didn't believe in that. So you do believe in that. And now to try and convince yourself that you don't believe in it, I'm not sure that's going to work. I respect your problem, madam. I respect you. I really want to help you here. So please don't think I'm making a mockery of the problem that you have put forward, and I appreciate this is something very personal, something that is very close to you. But of course, I want to empower you. I want you to feel in command and in control. Because right now, these words tell me that you feel helpless. Let me put it this way. I care more about the fact that you feel helpless than about the fact that you're worried you might lose your husband in 4 years' time. Think what you may of me, but that's the way I am. Because losing your husband, that's just one problem out of a myriad of problems that you will come across from today onwards and between now and 2025. What if it's your son in 2022? What if it's your daughter in 2023? What if it's your mother in 2024? That's why I'm not here to give you answers. I'm here to offer to you a solution. Something that which you can apply to any problem in life, anything of the sort. My duty is to help you change the way you think. To help you think in the right way. After all, that is what you are. The way you think is what you are. If you think you have a problem, then you have a problem. This is so true. How profound these words are, you will realize as you go further in the Dhamma. To have a problem, you need to think that you have a problem. It's only when you think that you have a problem, do you have a problem. Because really, the truth is, there are just events. In this world, there are events. Stuff happens. One might say, how rude, Swami answered. I'm talking about my husband here. And you say it's just an event? Well, ask someone to whom this is not their husband, and they'll tell you it's an event. That's why I say, take yourself out of the problem. Now look at it. And I'm just talking about one approach here. So I've already suggested you get someone to talk to you about the problem and get their solutions, or rather you offer solutions to your own problem. Then you don't need to listen to the rest of what I have to say here, really. The things that I'm about to share with you, you'll be able to share yourself. This is not magic by any way. I'm not some oracle that has the answers to all solutions, all problems in this world. The solution is there. It's there. As I said, it's only when you think you have a problem, do you have a problem. Otherwise, they're just events. The solution is just there. So it's not that I have some superpower, a really high IQ, whereby you come with any problem and I have a solution to offer you. That's not because I'm a genius or I'm a prodigy. That's not the way it works. The solution is right there. It's just I'm not the one going through the problem. That's why I don't see the problem. I see the solution. It's not magic. It's just logic. When you don't see the logic, now you think it's magic. That's why I want to empower you to think like I do. That's what my teachers do with me. What you see here, what you see today, is the way I think. And you know I'm brutally honest. You know when you put forward a question like this, you know I'll be the last one to say, "Oh, is that so? Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that." I'm not like that. I can show you empathy, I can show you emotion, you know, I can sympathize with you, but honestly, did you put this email to me to earn my sympathy? Okay, I give you all the sympathy in the world. Right, problem solved. Right, let's cry together. Problem solved. Let me hold your hand. Right, and let's cry together. Problem solved. I like to reason things out. Because I have always found that there's logic in everything. There's a reason, there's a rhyme and reason in everything. You know, because we are so fortunate to have teachers who have taught us to think in this way. So when we are empowered, when we have those tools in our armory, in our arsenal, why do we worry? Why do we have to find, why do we have to involve emotion? Yes, yeah, if you need someone, if you need a shoulder to cry, you can have this. It's free. But at the end of the day, you need an answer to your problem. Not all the tears in the world will solve your problem. How do I know? You've cried shed loads already. Not just shed loads, but ocean loads. A poem comes to mind by the great Thero. Who wrote the Lovada Sangraha, Ananda Maitri, or Vidagam Maitri Thero. I'll not relate it to you in Sinhala, but I'll give you the meaning in English. Actually, why not? I'll give it to you in Sinhala and then I'll give you the meaning in English as well. Because I appreciate there are some of you who do understand English, Sinhala even. Ekama sataku tama maumala dukata venama handu kandule bindu valata mehama mo dudiya අඩුවන කලට තවම සසර කාලය ඇයි තොපට. So that's the verse in Sinhala. So those of you who didn't understand, start learning Sinhala. You're missing out a lot. So what does he mean? What is the meaning of that poem? The amount of tears that each and every one of us, not all of us, each and every one of us have shed in this long journey in samsara, at the death of just our mother. Not all our mothers, not all our parents, not all our family, not siblings, friends, no, just a mother. In every birth, you would have had a mother. Right? So, if you imagine your journey in samsara, think, not imagine, but rather think about your journey in samsara. Just you and you alone, each and every one of us. The amount of tears that we have shed at the loss of our mother far exceeds all the water in all of the oceans across the world. Just think about that for a second. Not all of us, each and every one of us, the amount of tears that we have shed, not at the loss of mother and father and brother and sister, just mother. So, you've got to think about father separately, and then brother as another one, sister as another one, husband as another one, wife as another one. So, each and every one of us, at the loss of our mother alone, the amount of tears you have shed, how much do you cry when you cry at any given time? If you cried for 10 minutes, how much tears is that? Compared to the ocean? I mean, how many cups of tears can you cry? You can't measure that in cups, right? You'd probably go teaspoons. Tearspoons. You can cry tearspoons full. But oceans? Just take a moment to picture the last time you went to the beach and you looked at the vast ocean, just the bit that you could see of it. 80% of the planet is covered in water. I'll repeat, folks, each and every one of us, the amount of tears that we have shed at the loss of our mother alone in this journey in samsara, not is equal to, but far exceeds all of the water in all of the oceans. So, do we need an answer or do we need a solution? Think to yourself, do you need an answer or do you need a solution? Do you need me to hold your hand and cry with you? And to pity you, maybe give you a warm embrace, a hug, and say, "Oh, I understand. It's okay, it's okay. I'm here for you." How can I say I'm here for you when I also face that same fate? This "I'm here for you" nonsense is so far, so overrated. Right? When you have a problem, I'm here for you. With what confidence can you say, "I'm here for you" when someone has a problem? As I'm saying, as a teacher, my duty is not to be here for you. My duty is to be able to make yourself be there for yourself. Because you and yourself alone will have to face your problems and apply the solutions. So, what should we offer as a solution to this lady. I'm sorry to hear that you've been trying to tell yourself not to believe in such things. But I think it's too late for that, because you already believe in those things. That's why you asked the astrologer. So now that it's not good, it's not so good news, you're trying to tell yourself, no, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true. It doesn't work like that. I believe in you when you say things I like to hear, and I won't believe in you when I hear you say things that I don't like to hear. Please advise me how to vidarshana. So what she means here is how to reflect on this through wisdom, this thought, and rid of all this unnecessary suffering I'm going through. There's one word I just love in this sentence. Any thoughts what that is? I'll repeat it. Please advise me how to reflect. I'll use that word instead of vidarshana. Reflect on this thought and rid of all this unnecessary suffering I'm going through. There's one word I just love in this sentence. What do you think that is? Unnecessary. All of suffering is unnecessary. Not just this, but all suffering is unnecessary. And suffering is artificial. It is not natural. We create our own suffering. As I said, in this world, there are just events. Stuff happens. Things happen. Just the other day, I was discussing something similar with a fellow monk. And we were talking about how pointless it is that people cry on behalf of others at their funerals. Again, I'm probably one of the most brutally honest people you will find. So be warned, you're not going to get sympathy from me. You're going to get logic from me. If you don't like my answers, then don't ask the questions. I'm all for being good and kind-hearted and generous and showing people affection, care, love and all that. Right? Ask the people around me. They'll vouch for that. I'm all for that. But when you have a problem, we can do all the TLC, but that's not going to give you the answer to move on. At the end of all the tender and loving care and the affections and the hugs and the kisses and the embraces and the patting your head and no, it's okay, my darling. After all that, you're still left with the problem. So all of that is good, but what's great is to find a solution to the problem. So I was talking with this monk the other day, and we were talking about how pointless it is to cry at people's funerals on their behalf. I mean, you know, on their behalf. It's fair if you're crying on your behalf, right? You know, I can't bear the loss of this person. It seems like a joke to me when some people cry on their behalf. Like, you know, what a wonderful life this man lived. Look at all that he's lost. What a shame. He lived a beautiful life. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you remember regretting your death from your previous birth? When was the last time you caught yourself crying because you died in your previous birth? Good point, Swami Nasa. Oh my God, I feel so sad now. Right, let's all start crying then. Shall I give you cry time? Like play time? Give you cry time? Just because I reminded you that you died in your last birth. I have not heard anyone cry because they died in their previous birth. Some people don't even know. Some people don't care. Because once you're born, it's back to square one and it's a new game. It's like when Mario dies in the last game and says game over, then you don't see Mario crying in the next game. It's a new game. 3, 2, 1, off you go. So, you know, that person that on whose behalf people are crying is probably living a wonderful life in the next birth. Perhaps they're already the spouse to someone else. And in this birth, the old spouse is still crying. Oh, my dear loving husband, you were so faithful to me. It's terrible what happened. How much he lost. At such a tender and young age, he had so much life and vitality left in him. And today he has got no daughters. He doesn't have his son with him. He doesn't have his daughter with him. He doesn't have his wife with him. How terrible. What a loss. And this man is probably already reborn somewhere. And perhaps even, maybe if they're a deva, you know, they're already born 16 years of age with their spouses, spouses. And they're just living a fine life. So much so, if they saw you, they're like, why is that woman crying? When we are blinded in our grief, we fail to see the truth. We fail to see facts. We fail to see logic. We fail to see reason. It makes absolutely no sense to cry on someone else's behalf because they're not crying that they died in their previous birth. So if they don't have a problem with it, what's yours? As I say, if you've never cried because you died in your last birth, then I'm saying, why are you going to cry because someone else dies? They're not crying. They're living a happy life. Maybe they're born already to a Saudi prince into the lap of luxury. Already conceived in a Saudi princess's womb. Is going to be born into a fantastic life full of riches and wealth. And you're mourning about all that he has lost. There's always more than what meets the eye. This story that we see on the outside is just so overrated. It's a drama. Draw back the curtains and start looking at what really happens. Look at the true story. Look at the truth. Look at what's really going on. We just see a drama. So, you must understand then, folks, that crying on behalf of someone else is meaningless. Because even they don't give a toss that they died in their previous birth. Just like you don't care. To you, this life is everything. And your ambition now is to make the most of what you have now. You don't care one bit about what happened last birth. You don't even know, for most part of your life, that there was something called a last birth. Or a previous birth. Right? So that's one part. Now the second question I have to this lady. My question to you, madam, is why did it take an astrologer to tell you that your husband's going to die? I'm an astrologer. Ask your husband. He's an astrologer. Did you marry someone you thought was not going to die? Just think about it. You know, when you buy anything, any food items from the supermarket, right? One of the things you check is the expiry date, don't you? That you know it's going to expire, don't you? When you bring it home. So did you not know it was going to expire when you tied the knot? I mean, let's face the facts. Did you not know that it had an expiry date? What if your husband is really due to die next year? And really what the astrologer is saying is, no, don't worry, he's going to live for another 3 years. Actually, what if the astrologer is wrong? You know, you're worried right now because you think the astrologer is right. And that's why you don't want to believe in such things. I'm saying, actually, it's in your benefit to believe in what he's saying, because actually, let me see. Actually, no, he's going to die next year. Now whose side are you on? Now you're going to be sending this email to the astrologer to say, dear astrologer, I spoke to this Bhante and he tells me my husband's going to die next year. I'm trying not to believe in such things. Please help me. Make my mind up. Because you told me he's only going to die in 2025. This Swami Maharaj says he's going to die next year. Now whose side are you on? Is this news to you? Again, please forgive me for being brutally honest. That's just the way I am. It is not because I care. It is not because I don't care. In fact, it's quite the opposite. I care so much about you. I want to talk to you straight and honest. I want to change the way you think, because there's an error in the way you think. I care so much about you. I'm not in the business of helping you make your mind up. Because you're thinking magic, I'm showing you logic. I'm asking you, until the astrologer foretold that your husband is going to die and will not live beyond 2025, so you thought that he was going to live beyond 2025? What reasons? Okay, so then tell me, right? I'll ask you a question. When is the right time for your husband to die? Let's talk reason, right? Let's talk logic, let's talk reason, let's be factual, and let's talk the truth. Because, you know, you don't like the sound of 2025, right? Okay. What do you like the sound of? What, 3025? I mean, what's a reasonable number? What would you say is fair? Because when the astrologer said 2025, you went, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Right? What's a good number? What would he have had to say at which your response would be, ah, oh, sounds about right. What's that number? Write it down on a piece of paper. Right? And then I'm going to say, how dare you? Do you not love your husband? That you now have, because you say, you know, this has been working in my mind, and it's as if I'm waiting for something bad to happen. So how dare you already have had an expiry date for your husband? Isn't that not something, would that not have been you waiting for something bad to happen? So he says 2025, and you thought it was 2030, right? So if the astrologer would have said 2030, then you're okay with that, is it? How dare you? Let me ask you, are you willing to go up to your husband and say, you know, I think you're going to die, 2030. Because really, you know, there's an astrologer within you, isn't there? That's why you listen to another astrologer and you just don't like what he says. Because you already have a predetermined expiry date for your husband. So you're really, by that token, you are also an astrologer. You have a date, and that date doesn't match with what this astrologer that you spoke to told you, so therefore you have a problem, right? So how about you become the astrologer, you go to your husband and tell him, I've got news for you, darling. I think you're going to die in 2030. What's he going to say? Call the lawyer. I want my divorce papers. So it's not as if there was never a date. Is there? I mean, is it? It's not like there was never a date. It's just that you just don't like the sound of this date. So, does that not tell us that there was always a date in your mind? How cruel. So, you know, this astrologer only spoke of your husband's imminent death, right? Because you asked him about it. Until then, he never considered that. He didn't even know your husband. But you, madam, you were always planning his death. Because if we had asked you, even before you spoke to the astrologer, when do you think your husband's going to die, you would have had a date for that. It just happens to be that you spoke to this astrologer and the date that he has offered you does not match with the date that you have in your mind. That is where the problem is. Yes or no? Are you still listening to this? You thought losing your husband was going to be painful. I know. These words are brutally honest. You feel like they are piercing you. But hey, I'm going to give you the truth. And nothing but the truth. You know, more than anyone, that I'll be the first to say, love your husband. Look after him, take care of him, right? Be the best wife you could ever be, right? And shower him with love, affection, and care, and your blessings. Be a devoted wife. You know, that's the stuff we always talk about. You're sick and tired of me flogging the same horse, the same dead horse, right? That's a broken record at our monastery. That's all we talk about. I've heard some people say. I fulfill your duties and care for him and ask him how he's doing, and you know, the moment he walks through the door, don't go and ask him, what have you brought for me? And, you know, I'll be the first to say, be the best you can be and show love, affection and care to everyone around you. But now we're talking about a problem. Now we're in the operation theater. This is not time for hanky-panky. This is time to talk about the truth. This is time for an IV dose. As you've asked me, you expect an early reply. And again, as I say, it's unnecessary suffering. I want you to realize that you are the creator of your own suffering. This event was due to come anyway, and you knew that. That was not news to you. You knew it was coming all along. Even when you met him for the first time, you held his hand for the first time, you discussed marriage for the first time, you set a date for the wedding for the first time, right? You came out about it to your friends, excuse me, and your family for the first time, and you got on the portal for the first time. Right? And when you exchanged vows and exchanged rings, you knew this all along. At any point in this story, if I had asked you, when do you think your husband's going to die? Or your husband-to-be is going to die, you would have had a date in mind. It's not news that he's going to die. Let's be honest. What you just don't like is that some other fellow, this astrologer guy, he's done his math, he's looked at the stars, and he's come up with another date. And you just don't like the sound of that. Because it's earlier than the date that you have in your mind. Yes or no? So again, everyone listening to this sermon, don't think this is an answer to a question. You'd be foolish to think likewise. This is not an answer to a question. This is a solution to a problem. Because you will all find yourself in this situation at some point in your life. Really, no, that's not true. At every point in your life. Right now, are you not worried that one day people around you will die? It's just that, you know, you don't always think about it. But doesn't the problem exist all the time? It's always there. It's not that only when you think about someone's going to die, you know, does their clock start ticking again, the resume button. You know, they're always closing their death, nearing their death. That happens all the time. So this is not news to anyone. You knew this date was coming. And it just happens to be that you don't like the sound of it. So that's another thing to think about. You asked me for ways in which you need to think about this and rid of all the unnecessary suffering, right? So I'm giving you techniques. I'm giving you methods. I'm giving you solutions. So these are important things to think about. not just important things to think about, this is the way to think about. This is how you should think about. We suffer because we deceive ourselves. Because we create an illusion. And we choose to live in it. Hence, unnecessary. All suffering is unnecessary. Another thing I'd like to ask the good lady to think about. What makes you think, madam, that you are going to be around to witness your husband's death? Have you checked your expiry date? Well, you know, the thing is, when that astrologer gave you that date, before you started worrying about this, you should have done one more thing. What was that? You should have asked him, when's my date? Because if your date is before his date, then really you're just wasting your time worrying about his date, right? So astrologer says 2025, all right, I'm not going to worry. Before I ask the next question, Mr. Astrologer, when's my date? 2024. Whew. Thank goodness, now I don't need to worry about my husband's death. This is the truth. When was the last time a man on his deathbed, right, ever worried about people around him dying? He's worried about his death, right? I mean, you've watched films, you've seen stories, and you know, you might have been in similar situations before. Right? A person's on his deathbed, last few days, last few moments, right? Have you ever seen them concerned about your death? Have they ever been worried about your death? No. They're worried about their death. Why? Because theirs has come before yours. So that's what I'm saying. When that astrologer gave you, your husband, a date, what you ought to have done, madam, is asked him, can you just check and give me a date as well, please? And then based on that answer, decided whether you should worry about your husband's death or not. Because if that date, your date, were before his date, then this email would have taken a very different tone. And it would have been an entirely different story. Which begs another question. You already have a date in mind for your death. Now that worries me more than anything. You think you are going to outlive your husband. How dare you? Who gave you the right to make that call? Did you even speak to an astrologer before you decided on that? Think about this. These are all things that happen inside your mind automatically without even knowing about it. Without even thinking about it. If you analyze the situation, you'll begin to realize that actually your suffering is unnecessary and the answers are with you. See, you didn't think about this until I prompted you, did you? That you already had a date in your mind for your husband's death? That thought never passed your mind until I prompted you to think about it. But now you know that is true. It just happens to be that the date provided by the astrologer does not match the date that you have in your mind. That you didn't think about. So really, you're not as nice as you think you are. And secondly, you had it planned. You already had it planned that you were going to outlive your husband. Think about it. As nice as we think we are, or as nice as we might think we are, as loving and as kind-hearted as we might think we are, when I ask you the question, madam, did you not already have it planned in your mind that you would outlive your husband? Well before the surgery and well before the astrologer told you that your husband's going to die in the next few years? That was your plan all along, wasn't it? That he would die before you? So then there's nothing new. I repeat, please don't feel I don't care. I'm heartless. I don't mind you think of me that way, but if you start to think like that, then you fail to take away from this sermon what you need to change the way you need to think. Let's be honest, you have a problem to which you are struggling to find answers. That is why you have sent this question through to me. So you're hoping we can offer you something. So I don't want you to miss out. I don't want you to lose out. If you feel that I'm heartless and I don't care, then you may not feel inclined to listen to what I have to say. That is why I emphasize. The reason I'm saying these things is because I care. All of this is logical, and besides, you have asked how to vidarshana this thought in your own words. Not how can I make my mind up, but rather how can I insightfully analyze this situation. That is what vidarshana is. I'm giving you what you've asked for. So is it not true then that all along you expected this to happen just the way it is going to happen? And what way is that? That your husband would die before you? How do I say this? Well, if you thought you were going to die before him, now it's not his death that you'd be worrying about. You'd be worrying about whose? Of course, you'd be worrying about yours. But nowhere in this email does it say you're worried about your death, or that you're going to leave your family, your parents, your children. You're talking about Your husband is going to die in the next few years. And you feel like you're waiting for something bad to happen. So you already had it planned that you would outlive your husband. Well, isn't that what's going to happen? So you're getting what you asked for. And besides, if I were to tell you that you would die, if you ask the astrologer, let's imagine he said that you would die a day after your husband would die. Now it wouldn't be so much of a problem. Because really the problem here is not so much about him as it is about you. Now this is a very general statement. I'm not essentially necessarily targeting this at any particular person or yourself, madam. This is how people are. This is how the mind works. This is how the mind works. The mind is always concerned about its well-being. Everyone is concerned about their well-being. The worry is, what's going to happen to me if such and such person exits my life? What's going to happen to me? How am I going to survive? How am I going to be able to do all these wonderful things that I have enjoyed doing so far? We know it's not because of on behalf of the other person. I've already proved that to you. There's no point crying about the other person because the other person won't even know that they're dead a moment after they're dead. Because the moment of death, you don't know you're dying anyway because you're dying. The moment before death, you're not dead, so you're not dead. The moment after death, you're reborn, so you don't know you died. So really, death just happens in a fraction of a second. This fear of death is so overrated. Because you don't suffer from death for very long. Really, it's you have more fear of death than grief of death as an individual. You don't grieve your own death. You're fearful of your own death. Remember, we talked about this previously. Fear is about events that haven't yet come. So that's about the future. Grief is about things that have already happened. You don't grieve your own death, do you? No, because to grieve, you will already have been reborn. And then once you're reborn, you don't worry about your previous incarnation death. You're just concerned about how you're going to make life work out in this life. So really, there's no grief as far as death is concerned. It's just fear. Fear is about events that haven't yet happened. So really, it's just a nonsense. So the suffering with death is always about something that has not arrived yet. I'm talking about on a personal level. We can grieve other people's death, but then we understand that really what we are grieving is not their death. We are mourning for ourselves. Oh, I've lost my husband. Oh, I've lost my wife. Oh, I've lost my mother. Oh, I've lost my father. Oh, I've lost my best friend. Now what's going to happen to me? I feel so sorry for myself, is what we're saying when we mourn someone's death. Selfless or selfish, what do you think? I won't answer that question. I'll leave it for you to decide. Even in someone's death, we find the time to be selfish. Not so kind-hearted after all, are we? not so thoughtful about others after all, are we? This is the truth. So we need to understand that this is the operation, this is the way the mind works, the operation of the mind. That is what Buddhist philosophy is all about. Understanding how this mind works and then healing it. Using the medicine of Dhamma. That's why I've always asked you to try and look at yourself as a patient and then be the doctor to heal the patient. Because then you take a very pragmatic approach. You look at things very logically, very, very rationally. Irrational thinking processes begin to cease. So think about it. We have already decided that we are going to outlive our loved ones. But to be fair, or rather, you know, when we share our love and our loving words with our loved ones, what do we normally say? I want you to take as many years as you can from my life and live long after me. I want you to outlive me. You must live on and be happy. When I go to the heavens, I will look at you and give you my blessings. Saying is one, doing is another. So really, we've just been hypocritical all along. Never meant what we said. What we really meant to say was, any chance I could maybe get a few years of your life and extend mine? So think about it. What people really do when they mourn is they think about what's going to happen to them now that such and such has passed away. Or such and such thing has happened. That is what mourning is all about. That's why arahants don't mourn. They contemplate on what has happened. They realize the event and they realize the loss spiritually. That's why when the Buddha passed away, the arahants who were there at the time, they contemplated on the situation and they thought to themselves, the Buddha's passing away is not a good thing for all sentient beings. If he had lived on for another few years, then more people, more devas, more brahmas, more sentient beings would have benefited from that. But alas, time has come for him to pass away. They reflected on that. They contemplated on the truth of cause and effect. They reflected on that reality. But then there were others who had not perfected their thinking. Their thinking was flawed. There were errors in their thinking processes. They thought wrong thoughts. Wrong, not wrong as in bad, but wrong as in it's incorrect. They thought, what's going to happen to me now? Preservation of the self kicked in. Self-defense kicked in. Instinctive, what can I do to protect myself now? Kicked in. That's what happened. So the same applies in these situations. So that's another thing to reflect on, another way to think about this situation. I shall offer you another. You see, as I'm saying, I'm not offering you an answer to a problem or an answer to a question. Rather, I'm offering you a solution to a problem. And in these solutions, you'll find many things practically that you can do. I have already offered you a few. Here's another. Think about what your husband needs right now. What does he need right now? Versus what you want right now. Let's imagine that this is really going to happen. 2025. We've already discussed the fact that I think, you know, 2025 is a, you know, who says it's not going to be 2022? Right? Because we live life, we need to live life really expecting death to happen at any moment. Because after all, cause and effect is the principle that determines, that orchestrates the entire universe and everything that operates within itself. So, life is an effect that is determined by causes that are in operation at that moment in time. What is the guarantee, I ask you, that this astrologer is right and that your husband will live till 2025? Why do you think you have 4 years left? And equally, why do you think that you're going to live long enough to witness this? You know, it may be that one day you're driving your car thinking about, oh, my husband, you know, I've only got 4 more years to be with him. And you don't see the car coming from the side. You get into a car crash because you don't have enough time to apply the brakes, and that's it. Now no more concern about when is my husband going to die, because you're dead. You're reset on the game and you start again, new life, new ambitions. Now you have no concern about your husband from your previous birth. You have no concern whatsoever about your mother or your father from your previous birth, or your children, whatever happened to them from your previous birth. Absolutely none. As if they never happened. Now, new life, new parents, new siblings, new husband, new wife, new children, and life goes on. All of this is very short-lived, folks. All this mourning and, oh my God, these worries and fears, they're all very short-lived. Because there's a bigger problem. This is not the first time and this is not the last time. That, dear madam, is the bigger problem. You are so focused on one small question, on one tiny problem. Sometimes we are so focused, we lose sight of the bigger problem. That's why I quoted to you the verse from earlier. This is not the first time you've been in this situation. And this don't make it not the last time. So think about that. I was going to offer you another approach. What does he need right now? Let's imagine, right, that you're going to be around and you're going to be there when this happens, okay? Between now and 2025, you've got yourself about 4 years. What does he need in this time period? He needs positivity. He needs positive people around him. He needs to prepare himself for the next day. What is the next day? The next day after his death. He needs to prepare himself for that day. Perhaps it may be that he's done nothing so far to prepare himself for that. All the worrying and anxiousness in your mind is not going to help him. If you truly care about this person, what we really need to do now is take the focus away from yourself onto that person and ask ourselves, what do they need right now? Not what do I need right now. What do they need right now? Right now they need people to be positive around. Because, you know, he's probably thought to himself already that, you know, he probably maybe not have heard the astrologer. Maybe he doesn't know that you talk to an astrologer. Maybe he thinks he's got another 6 months left. Perhaps. So he's preparing for something that's going to happen in his mind, he thinks, in the next 6 months. So he needs your help to prepare for that. Worrying is not going to help with that. I'm saying shift the focus from yourself to the person who really needs it right now. In doing so, you're being less selfish and more selfless. I think if people really cared about the people that they care about or that they claim to care about, it is more important to think about what they need than what I need. What they need is really confidence, assurances that you'll be happy, you'll be fine even when they're gone. If your husband truly cares about you and loves you dearly, which I'm sure he does, what he's interested in is to know that you'll be fine when he's gone. Anyone who feels differently, I'd say that's terrible. Imagine that. A husband who wants his wife to weep. He wants his wife to cry. The doctors have said, I'm going to die. And this woman, she's not even crying. He doesn't deserve your tears, is all I have to say. That is very selfish. If when you're in a bad state, if when you're on your deathbed, or if you're indisposed and you want people around you to cry and to weep and to faint and for their lives to become a mess, and that's when you know they care about you, you don't care at all about them. Ask yourself, folks, are you someone who'll truly be happy to learn that the people around you are quite all right with your passing away? Are you ready to think like this? See, I'm getting you to think in ways you've never thought before. Because when you start to think like this, you'll find your defilements. If you have this problem. I'm urging you to think in this way. In what way? Imagine you have just been diagnosed with something terminal. You've been given 3 months. 3 months from today. You've informed your family, your wife or your husband or your children, right? You've informed the lot of them. And you say, you go and tell your wife, honey, I've just got the reports. Had a tough conversation with the doctor. Just found out that, you know, in 3 months' time, you're not going to have a husband. If she responds, oh, okay. So you're saying we'll have to prepare a way to live without you, right? That's what you're saying, right? Are you willing and ready to accept that? Oh, what is the reaction that you want from them? I want you to think long and hard about these things, folks. You've no idea how defilements completely cover up the mind, and they make you think that you're so good, you're so kind, and you so love everyone around you, and you want their best, what is best for them. But truly, what you really want is what is best for you. So that's why I'm asking you to think in this way. Ask yourself, if you were to tell your family, I've 3 months, that's it. You call your son, Putta, I've got something terrible to tell you. I've got some bad news. Your dad has just been diagnosed with this, and the doctors have said 3 months and at most. So I have no other way of breaking this news to you, so I have to tell it to you straight. Right, so in 3 months from today, you will be without a father. And your son goes, oh, it's all right, Dad. Uncle John from next door, he's quite nice. He's friends with me. He'll play football with me. I'm all right with that. That's fine. I'll be done because I just had to stop the football to come and talk to you. If that is the response that you get from your son, when you inform him of your expiry date in 3 months' time, how would that make you feel? Honestly. Honestly, how would that make you feel? Would you be okay with that? Or would you be more like, how dare you? He didn't even cry. He doesn't care about his father. So what is caring mean then? Crying? So if someone cries, is that caring? Is that why people get hired at funerals to come and cry crocodile tears? No, caring is not that. True caring goes far beyond crying and weeping and lamenting and mourning. That is not truly caring. Truly caring is thinking about what is best for them. What if your son really said that because he thought to himself, if I now show that I am going to be in a terrible state to my father, then that's going to affect him. So, I'm just going to feel like, it's alright. Yeah, okay, Dad, that's fine. Say hi to God when you're there. Send a postcard. Perhaps he said that because he wanted you to be alright. But would you expect for him to care about it? And how would you expect him? How would you know that he cares? If you want him to cry and fall on his knees and hug you and be teary-eyed, that is more selfish. You're more thinking about yourself. Because really, do you want him to be sad? If you really care about someone, do you want them to be sad? Do you want them to cry? Do you want them to moan? No, really, what you want them to do is to be happy, right? All the time, regardless. But are you ready for that, truly and honestly? So I asked the good lady who sent us the message. Think about what's good for him, madam. Right now we are talking about the problem that you have. Because when you get too involved and too preoccupied with your problem, you forget that this person that we care about, he's got a bigger problem. If we assume that yes, you're going to outlive your husband, then your husband has a bigger problem. He's only got 4 years left. So really, this question, or rather, my time ought to be spent on him, don't you think? But right now, I'm talking to you. He's got a bigger problem. He's going to be dead in 4 years. You're going to be, well, you, what's the date you've given yourself again? Come on, you have a date. And it's not before 2025, is it? So if we really care about others, we need to think about others. Otherwise it's just words. I care about you. I so care about you, darling. I care about you, honey. Then if you care, then care. Help him prepare for his next journey, for the next leg of his journey. Help him earn merits. Introduce him to the Dhamma if he's not already in it. Show him how you have learned to cope with problems. Teach him that. Because he's going to be there one day. Fast forward 4 years from now, he's going to be on his deathbed, right? And he's going to be in a much more terrible state than you are, because you're going to lose a husband and he's going to lose what? A wife, son, daughter, house, mother, father, friends, teachers, relations, everything. You're going to lose just one person. He's going to lose the lot. Who do you think needs more help? Who do you think needs attention? And if he's not listening to the sermons, if he's not preparing himself for the inevitable, then I say it's your duty, if you really care, to help him prepare for that, just as much as I'm helping you to prepare, because I care. So help him. Slowly help him realize that you're going to be fine. That will take a load off his shoulders. Otherwise, we're focusing on the wrong things. Because, you know, you're going to be around for much longer. I can help you further. But he's only got 4 years left. Right? Even after he passes away, you can still come and talk to us. And then you can come and say, Swami Nanda, it's happened. I'm in a terrible state. Please help me. At that time, you know, I can lend you a hand. I can listen to you. Because when you're in a terrible state, there's no point talking to the Dhamma to you. When you're in a state of mourning, when you're in a state of intense grief or fear, there's no point talking to the Dhamma with you. At that time, you just need a shoulder. At that time, you need a friendly hand, a smile, a kind gesture. So we are willing to give you whatever it is you need. You've got us, you've got me for much longer than your husband. So really, who should we be focusing on right now? This gentleman who's only got 4 years left. So how about we shift our focus from you to him? How about we come up with a plan on how we can help him? How about we come up with a plan as to how you can get him involved in all the meritorious deeds that you do? Does he offer the Buddha Puja at home? Does he offer flowers? Does he light the oil lamp at home? Has he ever done a merit transfer? Has he ever observed the precepts? Ever? Has he ever been to a temple? Or a church? Or a mosque? Or a kovil? Let's start thinking about him. And let's come up with a plan on how we can help him. Because the way it works is, whatever it is you give, you shall receive. So if you're in a state of grief and worry and stress and mourning, help someone else relieve themselves from grief and fear. When you give, you shall receive. These are practical answers to your practical problem. And each of them involves changing the way you think. Because after all, a problem only exists if you believe a problem exists. If you see a problem, there is a problem. If you don't see a problem, there is no problem. You've heard people say, someone complains about something, the other guy says, I don't see that as a problem. See? What did they just say? I don't see that as a problem. So a problem is something you see. So it's not really there, it's just something you see. Because all problems are relative. What a problem is to me, or what's a problem to me, may not be a problem to you. What's a problem to you may not be a problem to me. This depends on what we see, how we see it, what we expect. So I say, let's come up with a plan on how we can help you. And finally, excuse me, I mentioned the word event. See, right now you're seeing this as something bad about to happen. Why do you feel that this is something bad? Why do you see that death is bad? Is it because he's going to lose out on the opportunity to earn merits, listen to the Dhamma, practice the path, perhaps become a Sotapanna, attain Nibbana? Is that why you think death is bad? If these are your answers, then I can say I agree with you. But why do you think death is bad? Is it because he's going to lose his family? Don't worry, he's going to get a brand new one a moment after his death. His next wife will probably be far better looking than you. I am mean sometimes, aren't I? You disagree? Am I saying things that can never be true? No, you don't. You can't say that. Besides, he's got to, you know, if he's gone through, undergone surgery, then maybe he's still ill. Perhaps there's a part of his body that is still troubling him. Maybe he's on drugs. And he's got aches and pains. At least all of that will come to an end. That is not to say choose death over life. As I'm asking you, what is the bad, what is something bad, what is so terrible about death? As far as I see it, there's only one thing that's terrible about death. You miss out on the opportunity. You lose out on the opportunity to not die again. That is to attain Nibbana, to become an Arahant, to become an Anagami person, to become a Sakrudagami, to become a Sotapanna. Excuse me. To listen to the Dhamma, to earn merits. You may, not can't say will always, but you may. Because if at the moment of death an unmeritorious deed comes to mind, then we get shot off, not to the blissful plane, but to the woeful plane. And then life continues there for as long as the power of that demerit remains unexpired. But you can help with that by introducing the Dhamma to him if he's not already in the Dhamma. Prepare him for death is what I'm asking you to do, madam. If you help someone prepare for death, then you will be prepared for death. What do I mean by helping someone prepare for death? Euthanasia? No. Heck no. Help them understand that there's a bigger problem. Death is not the problem. Being reborn is the problem. Expectation is the problem. Attachment is the problem. As I say, you know, death only happens in one moment. But what about suffering? Has that not been constant throughout your life? You work out the math. In a person's lifetime, do they suffer more because of death or because of all the things that happen to them throughout their life? What do you think? All the heartaches, all the disappointments, all the frustrations, anxiousness, fear, grief, annoyed, anger, pain, all this you endure during death or during lifetime? During your lifetime. So really, as I said, you work out the math. Which one's more painful, living or dying? Again, I repeat, death is not the answer. Becoming deathless is the answer. For that you have to live. That's why when we had a chat with Nick, we tried to explain to him that death is not the answer. Because for a mental problem, you seek a physical solution. There's no point in breaking the body when the problem is in the mind. That's why I said again, I mentioned a moment ago, if the pain is with the body, then after death, then that pain stops. But who knows, the moment you are reborn, perhaps someone breaks a leg. That could happen. There's no guarantee of that. That's just non-stop. There's no end to that. That's what I'm saying, talking about death is simply pointless, really. Death and preparing for death, all of that is just pointless. Because that is not, we are missing the point. We're not seeing the wood for the trees. There's a much bigger problem. Existence is a problem. Because during existence you have all sorts of ups and downs. Fear and grief have completely overwhelmed you. So much so that someone else's death can also bring you grief. So really then death is not the problem, is it? If someone else's death brings you a problem, you're alive, aren't you? So is it death or life during which you have to endure most pain and suffering? So let's focus on the right stuff and find solutions to the right problems. That is the way of the Buddhas. That is the way of the Buddha Shravakas. That is the way we rock and roll. So, I think I've offered you, madam, some practical solutions. Almost all of them involve changing the way you think, your approach, your perspective, looking at the problem insightfully as you have asked, to be able to do? And alongside that, of course, you can help your husband. Help him earn as much merits as you possibly can. And a great example of this I'd like to mention to you, I mentioned this once in our single sermon, is one of our monks. Now you'll be, I'm sharing this story with you because, you know, he's an example. One of our monks, his father recently had a stroke. He's taken to the hospital and now he's paralyzed. He's at home. So, I have, on speaking with this monk, he explained to me what had happened to his father. And so I asked him, Swaminansa, how are you helping him? What can we do together? How can I help you? How can we help him? Believe you me, you know what he said? He said, Swaminansa, help me do as many meritorious deeds as possible. He's already someone who does plenty of meritorious deeds. One of the things that sticks with me, and it will remain with me for a long time, is he walks around the monastery at least twice or thrice a week and collects herbs from the monastery grounds. He'll walk into the jungles. You know, it's a forest monastery. So he'll go around looking for herbs. And he'll collect them. And in the mornings, particularly before we have one of Guru Hamdranwanse's sermons, he prepares kanji, or a broth. What we locally refer to as kanda, which is a herbal soup, which is very vitalizing, and it helps relieve all sorts of ailments. It's good medicine for the body. So he makes his offering to all the monks and anagarikas at the monastery. With his own bare hands, he collects the herbs, and he prepares the broth, and he offers it, including offering the Buddha Puja. He's been doing this for some time now. And so I asked him, Swaminansa, how can I help you? He said, Swaminansa, help me do as many meritorious deeds as possible. So I asked him, why? Because, he tells me, I talk to my father every week, and although he is physically paralyzed, I am not prepared to allow him to become mentally paralyzed. Every time I talk to him, I tell him all of the meritorious deeds, one after the other, that I have done throughout the week. And every time I share something with him, he can't bring his hands together now because he's paralyzed. But he says, Sadhu, Sadhu. And he tells his father, Tata, it is because of you I have been able to do what I do today. It is because of the way you brought me up. You taught me how to become a great man. Because he didn't come here as a child monk. He didn't come here at a very young age. Certainly not as a child. He was an adult when he listened to the sermons and decided to become an anagarika, and he's now a monk at our monastery. So it was his father and his mother who brought him up to be who he is today. So every time he speaks to his father, he tells him, Tata, this is what I did today. You know what? Today we washed the Buddha statue. Today I offered the broth today I plucked flowers and offered it. Today I washed this Swaminuhansi's robes. Today I cleaned the Dhamma hall. Today I sweep the grounds. Today I went and helped to make the alms, the afternoon meal for the Swaminuhansi's. All this, Tata, I was able to do because of you. Because you taught me to be a good person. You taught me to be a great person. You helped me. You gave me your kind permission and blessings to come here, to this monastery. Today I'm a very happy person, thanks to you, Tata. And with each of these words, can you imagine the power that it must have on this man's heart? I wouldn't be surprised if a year from now that man gets back up on his feet. I wouldn't be surprised. Miracles do happen. Miracles do happen because, really, it's not magic, it's logic. What this Swaminuhansi is doing so tactfully is constantly keeping his father's mind at peace and helping him rejoice in merits, and not just any old merits, folks. This is merits done on behalf of the Sambuddha Shasana. Can you see what a great son he is? He cares about his father. Now that's a son who really cares. As a son who really loves his father. Because that is what love and care is all about. Doing what is best for them. He has forbidden. In his family he has a few sisters and his mother. He has forbidden his family from crying and weeping in front of his father. He said, don't you ever let me learn that you have been crying in front of Tata. When you are beside him, when you are around him, you should always be smiling. You should always be happy. You should always talk positive things with him. Here we have, ladies and gentlemen, a mastermind. Someone who's a master of the mind. Well, of course, he's a disciple of the great mastermind. You know, this is the kind of stuff we need to be doing with our beloved parents, with our beloved spouses, husbands, wives, children, parents, you know, when they fall ill, when they've been diagnosed with something and you know, their time is limited. These are the things we ought to be doing. Preparing them because we love them, because we care about them. Not thinking about us. I have so much respect for that monk. Yes, he so wants to share these meritorious deeds with his father. You know, the other day he came and spoke to us and he said, Swaminuhansi, from today on, I will walk around the monastery and I will clean it top to bottom. If ever I see any litter on the floor, right, he has a little cart that he has prepared for himself. And he pushes that cart around, collecting all bits of litter, bits of paper, maybe a nail or something that got dropped somewhere in a construction site perhaps. Or if there's any plastic that's thrown around, he'll walk around the monastery collecting all that old cardboard, tin, things like that, glass, anything that has been discarded accidentally. And he collects all that and he takes it to the rubbish pit. And he does it for no other reason. One, for his own salvation, and two, he speaks to his father every week. And he has a list of all the meritorious deeds he's done. And he says, Dadi, guess what I've been up to? You know, this week, here's what I did. And the father says, sadhu, 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 apihandru, sadhu, sadhu. And after all that is said, he says, all of this because of you, my father. That man must feel on top of the world. He must be a very proud father. See, now there's no time for that father to feel self-pity. Why should he feel self-pity? Look at what he's done. Look at his creation. Look at what he's gifted to the world. A great man. I'm saying this is how we need to approach the people that we love, the people we care about in their difficult times. Not holding their hand and crying. Helping them get back on their own two mental feet. Giving them courage. Keeping them happy. Always only talking positive things. Telling them the things that you are able to do. If they're not able to do much, then you do them and then you go and share it with them and say, I've only been able to do this because of you. Because you've been a good person to me, you've been a good husband to me. These are things I learned from you, darling husband. Before I became your wife, I never did this, I never offered the Buddha puja. But things that you have said prompted me. Today I'm a great mother. Look at our children. They're growing up to be the world's best children. This world will one day be thankful to you, my dear husband, and I, for having brought children like this into this world. That is what you and I have done together, to raise these wonderful children. And let's continue doing that. Let's continue raising them up, teaching them good manners, teaching them good behavior, teaching them kindness, gentleness. May they resemble their father wherever they may go. May their friends, acquaintances ask them, who's your father? Who's your mother? They must be great people. Keep them positive. See, that is what we need to do. That's what I'm saying. Make a plan. Plan with them in mind. Not plan with yourself in mind. Because when you try and help make someone else positive, what you give is what you get. You can't keep on trying to make someone else positive and remain negative. It just doesn't work like that. See if you can be really angry and put a smile on your face at the same time. Had a big white smile on your face, right? Teeth showing, and be really angry at someone at the same time. See if you can even do that. It's impossible. You know, make your husband feel, madam, that he's so proud to be your husband. He's so proud to have you as his wife. If you have children together, that he's so proud to be their father. Perhaps before his surgery, maybe he had to, I don't know, whether he's at home now or whether he's still able to go out and about, I don't know. I'm just making some broad assumptions. Let's say he has to spend more of his time at home now. How about you come up with a plan that going through that plan, he begins to feel having to undergo that surgery was the best thing that ever happened to him. whatever was the cause for him to have undergone that surgery, that was the best thing that ever happened to him. How about you start to make a plan to help him make him feel that way? You worry about him, you care about him, you give him all the love, affection, madam. You don't need to worry about how you're going to face the situation. You'll be just fine. We'll worry about you. I promised you this before. Oh wait, that was in a Singhala sermon. I just remembered. Show love, care and affection to 5 people. Your husband or your wife, your mother, your father, your siblings and your children. Care for them, show them love, affection, and really care about them, not about you. You do that for them, I'll look after you. We'll be there for you. Because in you doing for them, great things will happen to you. You needn't worry about yourself. People who spend time worrying about themselves, crying about themselves, or crying for themselves, will always be like that. But people who spend their life dedicating themselves to others, committing themselves to others' well-being, always pushing themselves so that they can be better than they are today for other people, end up becoming the greatest people, the happiest people that this world has ever seen. That is how we rock and roll. So, thank you very much for your question, madam. A wonderful question. A lot of people would have learned a lot. Because in learning how to face death, we learn how to face life. Some of the best lessons for life, we learn when we learn how to face death. Thank you very much for your question. As I said, I have not offered you an answer to a question. What we have discussed is a solution to a problem. A bunch of things. Lots of practical ways in which you can approach this. Now, what you have learned, apply. And magic will happen. All you need to do is apply the logic and magic will happen. That's the way it works. Don't expect magic to happen if you don't do the logic. Do the logic and magic will happen. May the Triple Gem bless you too. Give our regards to your husband. By which I mean, you don't need to go and tell him, Swami Mahasaya gave his regards. Give our regards to your husband. Take us to him. How? Through you. That's an active thing. Take the Mahasangha to him. Make him feel he's the luckiest man alive. And then you needn't worry about him, you needn't worry about you. Once again, thank you very much for your question. It is greatly appreciated. Okay, I think we've talked enough for one day. That was quite an eye-opener for me as well. A lot of things I never thought I got the chance to contemplate. A lot of things I've never said before. You've given me plenty to think about. Tonight I can spend thinking about all the things that we have discussed. Lots of interesting ways of looking at problems. So, thank you. On that note then, let us transfer the merits. And I would like to invite all of you who are listeners on this sermon to, when you transfer these merits, to please take a moment to transfer your blessings and merits to this lady and her husband, because she is part of our family, and therefore, of course, so is her husband. We are one family. You know how we look after each other. You know that. I don't need to teach your grandmother how to suck eggs. You know how we look after each other. Whenever we've had people share their problems, I was not the only one to offer solutions. Plenty times you come back with answers. And the same goes for Nick as well. Quite a few of you came back with very thoughtful and kind words that we then forwarded on to Nick, for which he has expressed his gratitude, which I'd like to convey to you. And someone told me the other day that Nick has inquired how he may become ordained. So I think he's doing all right now. Perhaps, who knows, one day you'll have Nick talk to you. He'll be on this seat delivering sermon to you. Who knows, eh? Magic happens. When we apply the logic that has been passed down to us from our forefathers, from the great master, when we apply the logic, the Four Noble Truths, magic happens. And long may magic happen for all of us. Okay then, let us take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired today by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to the Dhamma and engaging in various meritorious deeds. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves of how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Mahanse and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. And may through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane, and may through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It has also transferred merits we have acquired to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those of you who passed on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May it's the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, as well as our fellow listeners, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Samudra Shasane. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And may through the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our families, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form they could. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, and may all who have lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, including the most recent and prevailing one, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them, and may through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahatun Mahanses on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I, and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an Arahatun Mahanse or an Arahat Mehin Mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. We will now conclude the sermon. May the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.